And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam on a Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. With me, as always, is my good friend, Alex Spears. Alex, what's up?
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, Al. It's good to be back. We were off for a week, and now we're here. And we're going back to our old format where Al and I are going to come up with two topics that we think are interesting. And then we are going to have a guest. Today we have Adam Mares from DNVR. Also, the Locked On Nuggets podcast is going to join us here later on. But first, Al, what tickled your fancy this week? What caught your eye this week?
Oh, yes, I was definitely tickled this week, Andrew, because it's the middle of July, and I have been thinking about the worst teams in the league. Detroit, Oklahoma City, Orlando, and Houston. These four teams have been the bottom four teams in the league for two consecutive years now, which feels unique. It's not, actually, at all. You actually only have to go back a couple seasons when the Lakers, Suns, Sixers, and Nets accomplished the same feat two seasons in a row. But what is unique about this current group, in my opinion, is the overall positivity and excitement about these four teams kind of across the board. And it's a run of two good drafts in a row that has left all four of these teams in what seems like a great position to finally turn the corner. And now you have the Spurs beginning their beautiful tank, and the Jazz are on the verge of bottoming out. It doesn't appear like we're headed for a third consecutive season with the same teams at the bottom, which brings up the question, who will turn the corner the quickest? Who will jump the highest of the bottom four this season? Now, I've thought about this question, and I've settled on my answer, Andrew. So I would like to present to you and the listeners my top five reasons why the Orlando Magic will have the best finish of the current bottom four.
Oh, I cannot wait to hear these. Let's hear it.
Okay, so we'll go 5-1, and these are in order of importance. So if you hear number five and say to yourself, well, that's not very convincing, Alex, stop talking to yourself. We're not having a conversation. I can't hear you. Second of all, chill out. They're going to get better. Okay, Andrew, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, number five reason the Orlando Magic will have the best finish of the current bottom four is, honestly, I just think these other teams are worse and are more likely to pull the plug at some point during the season. Take the Rockets, for example. This is Houston's last year that they own their own pick before the bills need to be paid for the Russell Westbrook trade. Yep. It seems obvious, in my opinion, that Houston should prioritize maximizing that 2023 pick, especially considering the quality of the upcoming draft. Or look at OKC. If OKC is hanging around the play-in in February, do we really think they're going to go all out to be the 10th seed?
Pull the plug, baby. Pull the plug.
We do not. Now, what about Detroit? I bet a lot of people out there, that would be people's pick to finish the highest of this group.
Yep.
I'm just not there yet. I really like their core, but I'm also worried about expecting a huge jump when they'll be integrating two rookies who will likely play heavy minutes, especially like high usage rookie with Jaden Ivey. That feels like a lot to ask right off the bat. As for the Magic, now the thing with Orlando is they haven't had all of their young guys available for any extended period of time. And so assuming health, they're going to be incentivized next year to play those guys together so they know what they have. And as I'll explain later, Andrew, this could be a very good thing in terms of wins, which brings me to my number four reason why Orlando will have the best finish of the current bottom four. But honestly, before I get there, you know, this top five list doesn't sound that exciting. I mean, best finish among the current bottom four. That's kind of boring, to be honest. So let's juice this up, Andrew, because not only do I think Orlando will have the best finish of the bottom four.
Oh, no. What are you about to do?
The top five reasons why the Orlando Magic will be the 10th seed next season.
Wow. Okay. Now I'm locked in.
Now you're locked in. We're talking play-in Magic. Now, as I mentioned, the Magic have a lot to figure out with their best young players, which is why the number four reason the Orlando Magic will be the 10th seed next season is health. According to mangamesloss.com, the Magic were the most injured team in the league last year, and it wasn't particularly close. The Magic had over 450 games missed due to injury. The next closest teams were around the 400-game missed mark. Most teams in the NBA are somewhere between 250 and 300 games lost due to injury. 450 is a lot of missed games. Now, were some of those games tanking related? Probably. But there were a lot of real injuries here as well. Jonathan Isaac missed the entire season as he continued to rehab from an ACL. Markel Fultz only played in 18 games after recovering from his own ACL injury. And when he did come back, he was playing 20 minutes most nights. Jalen Suggs, of course, missed 34 games due to a combo of fractured thumb and a stress fracture in his ankle. You can debate the relative importance of those injuries. But if those players are healthy, Orlando's rotation all of a sudden looks a lot deeper. Listen to this 10-man lineup, Andrew. Fultz, Suggs, Wagner, Paolo, Wendell Carter Jr., Cole Anthony, Gary Harris, Mo Bamba, Chuma Okeke. That's nine guys before even getting to Isaac, who admittedly is a wild card.
Yeah.
That's a stronger 9 to 10-man rotation than any of these other bad teams, in my opinion. Now, I'm less of a fan of RJ Hampton and Terrence Ross, which is why I left them off. But that's the point. I went 10 deep without even really having to consider them. Which leads me to my number three reason the Orlando Magic will be the 10th seed this season, Andrew. The newest addition to that rotation that I just listed off, the number one overall pick, Paolo Banchero. When I read off that rotation, it might not have moved you the way it moves me. I think Orlando's core has unfairly fallen behind these other teams in terms of general perception and excitement because they were the last to get their high wattage star player. Detroit got Cade, OKC got Shea, Houston got Jalen Green. Those guys get people going, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Franz Wagner, Wendell Carter Jr., as good as they are, do not seem to excite the masses in the same way. No. And the result of that, in my opinion, is that Orlando's young core as a whole has gotten massively underrated. Because if you just step back and think about Franz Wagner and Wendell Carter Jr. as Orlando's second and third best building blocks, in whatever order you want, those two are so much further along than the number two and number three on the rest of these teams. So now you add in the number one guy, the face of the franchise type player, and the entire perception is going to change. Paolo will not just raise the ceiling of the Magic on the court. He will raise the ceiling of Orlando's young core in the minds of NBA fans. People are going to realize that the 3-4-5 combo of Franz, Paolo, and Wendell Carter Jr., who I wish there was a shorter way to say his name. I feel like I have to say his full name every single time. Wendell Carter Jr., does he have a nickname?
Yeah, WCJ doesn't feel right.
Every time I say Wendell Carter Jr., my brain tells me to say Willie Cauley-Stein. And I have to fight it off every single time. And it's really hard. People are going to realize that combo is an insanely skilled and complementary trio, perfectly suited for the modern game. Andrew, you know this. I was asking from the beginning of the draft process, why is no one mocking Paolo at number one? Doesn't Paolo address Orlando's biggest needs? I still believe that and think he was a perfect and necessary piece to complement what Orlando had already been building, which is my number two reason why Orlando will be the 10th seed this season. What has Orlando been building? They have been building a really good defensive foundation. And this is one of the reasons why so many assumed Orlando would go with Jabari or Chet. Length and defense has been the calling card for this Magic front office for years, going back to their time in Milwaukee. Looking at their young guys, there's so many plus defenders. Fultz, Suggs, Wagner, Wendell Carter Jr., Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac. It wasn't always obvious last season because of the aforementioned injuries, but I think it's worth noting that after Markel Fultz returned to the lineup on February 28th, Orlando had the 7th-ranked defense the rest of the season. They were 8-13 in those final 21 games. Now, you don't want to get too excited because, you know, things get weird at the end of the season, but you can look at the roster and see the defensive potential. And I think when projecting a team to significantly improve, you want to feel like there's some kind of identity, something you can hang your hat on. Most of these teams, actually, I think all of these teams are bottom five offensive teams last year. Yeah. And most of them are also bottom five defensively as well. And I think if healthy, Orlando's defense can be their identity. all of this, Andrew, brings me to the number one reason.
Before we get there, Wendell Carter does not have a nickname, according to Basketball Reference. Okay. So you got to stick with the Wendell Carter. Because no one just says, like, if you just said Wendell, I guess you could, because there's not another Wendell in the league. But no one just calls him Wendell.
And I also feel like Carter Jr. isn't specific enough.
Carter Jr. is not good. It's not a good way to describe him. He is Wendell Carter Jr.
Wendell Carter Jr. All right. Yeah. It's fine. I mean, I shouldn't complain. You know, it's not that hard to say. It's just a long name.
It's a long name.
Okay. All this, my number one reason why Orlando will be the 10th seed this season, their young guys are already good together. All of these teams were bad last year. They all won less than 25 games. And that's to be expected because you're playing young guys. And it takes young guys time to be positive contributors, typically, to gel and learn how to play together. But let's look at how some of these young cores fared by looking at the net ratings for their three-man young cores. Okay, let's start with Detroit. I would say their three-man young core last season would be Cade, Sadiq Bey, and Isaiah Stewart. That group played over 1,100 minutes together and had a minus 10.4 net rating. Really bad. Which, again, to be expected. I don't care, but, you know, it's there. What about Oklahoma City? Shea, Giddey, and Dort played 735 minutes together and had a minus 9.9 net rating.
Let's go.
Not good!
Let's go.
Now, Houston is tougher because they spent half the season double-checking to make sure Christian Wood and Daniel Tice was not the front court of the future. So the minutes are a little reduced. But Jalen Green, KPJ, and Şengün, they played less than 400 minutes together. Not a huge sample. They had a minus 6.4 net rating in those minutes. Again, not great. What about Orlando? Well, their most played three-man lineup of young guys was Wendell Carter Jr., Cole Anthony, and Franz Wagner.
Yep.
Those three played over 1,100 minutes together and had a plus 0.5 net rating. Plus! Three guys, 23 or younger, including a rookie and a second-year player who many thought was just a chucker, and they were a plus on the court together for a team that won 22 games. But you say, I know you're saying this, well, shouldn't you really include Jalen Suggs? I mean, that's who they took fourth overall. Fine. Wendell Carter Jr., Franz Wagner, and Jalen Suggs. 685 minutes together, minus 1.7 net rating.
That's not so bad.
Now, isn't that a little interesting?
Yeah, it is. That is interesting.
A listener, Dennis Todman, had brought this to my attention at some point during last season. It was something I followed the rest of the year. Because we just looked at all these other young cores who we're all so excited about. And they were, for the most part, terrible when they were on the court together last season. Which, again, for the last time, is fine and to be expected. But when a young core flips the script and actually shows signs this early of being productive together, I think that's worth paying attention to. That's that foundation that I'm talking about. You have young guys already playing well together. You add in good, young, defensive-minded players who have been injured. You add in the number one overall pick, who everyone says is the most ready to play in the draft, and also, by the way, addresses their biggest needs offensively. Add all that up, Andrew, and that is why the Orlando Magic will be the 10th seed next season.
Wow.
Are you convinced?
I kind of like it, yeah. No, I think that they're definitely on the upswing. I think the hope with bringing a guy like Paolo in is that he can be the focal point of the offense. That's what they're missing. They're missing a guy that can really just score the basketball, that you can give the ball to on any given possession. He can go get you a bucket. And he's just such a good decision maker, man. Like, that's really what was shining for him in Vegas, was that he just made winning plays. Like, he just knew the right plays to make, knew how to pass the basketball. And defensively, when he puts in effort, like, he's pretty good. So, yeah, I think they have the correct number one pick, and they have guys developing around them. I'd love to see Fultz get a full season of health.
I know.
Because there are a lot of ways that he was effective for them last year. And that's like gone like way under the radar, and rightly so. Like, it went under
the radar. Yeah, I was thinking about bringing up the fact that he might be the most underrated player in the NBA for totally like legitimate reasons for a lot of fans. Like, everyone, like a lot of people underrated him just because of the whole bust narrative with the Sixers and everything that happened there. But even the fact that he's like a point guard that doesn't shoot, like he's always going to be like naturally underrated because of that.
Yep.
And then he's on the Orlando Magic. Like, a lot of people just aren't watching the Magic. And so they don't realize like how important he can be to this team. I mean, he was a huge, I was looking at cleaning the glass, and Franz and Wendell Carter Jr. are like right at the top in terms of plus minus.
Yep.
But Markel Fultz is right there. I think he was like a plus 5.4 when he was on the court. And a lot of times he was coming off the bench, which their bench was not great last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if you have a full season of Fultz, adding in all these other young players, I think they're further along than we think when you look at their 22 wins last season.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I wouldn't bet on 10, but I think it's within the realm of possibility. Al, I was just sifting through NBA.com/stats and cleaning the glass over this past week, and I found 5 stats that you don't remember from last season. First stat, points off turnovers from NBA.com/stats. The number one player in points off turnovers is Devin Booker. I didn't remember that at all. It's, you think of players like Anthony Edwards, who's number 2. LeBron, number 3. Siakam, number 4. Zach LaVine, number 5.
Where's the Grizzly? Curry. I was thinking of Grizzly.
Even Steph Curry. John Morant is number 9.
Okay.
On points off of turnovers. Yeah, John Morant's a guy that probably would be guessed within the first like 3 or 4 guesses. But no, it's Devin Booker, which you don't think of him as a guy who plays with great pace, but the number one player in points off of turnovers. Stat number 2, efficiency differential from cleaning the glass. This is points scored minus points allowed per 100 possessions. Number one player in this, it's a no-brainer, it's Nikola Jokic, plus 19.5. No one's impressed by that stat. Jason Tatum, number 2, plus 16.5. But the number 3 player, at a plus 15.2, he plays for the Portland Trailblazers. He just got a new contract. His name is Jusuf Nurkić, third in efficiency differential. When I saw that, I said, what? This guy just got a 4-year, $70 million contract. Some people, including me, thought it was too rich for the big man. But if he can be as effective as he was last year, he's going to help the Blazers get back to the playoffs. And this was in 1,500 minutes. This was in, and the qualifier here was they had to play at least 1,000 minutes for this top 3. And Jusuf Nurkić made the top 3. I didn't see that coming.
That is very surprising, especially thinking back to how the start of their season went.
I know.
Like, I know they eventually had that nice run after the year turned when, like, Anthony Simons was really heating up. Dame was already out at that point. But, yeah, that is definitely surprising. I would have never guessed that. Yeah. I was about to say Anthony Simons as, like, when you said he played for the Blazers.
Yeah, I know. He would not have been maybe even the third Blazer I would have guessed. That would have been 15.2. Stat number 3, net rating. Al, NBA.com/stats, goes all the way back to the 96-97 season with net rating. This season, the largest net rating in the league went to the Phoenix Suns with a plus 7.5 net rating. Al, that is the lowest number for the best net rating that I can find on NBA.com/stats, all the way back to 1996. So no other team has ever had a lower net rating being the best net rating in the entire league. So 7.5, I found some like 7.8, maybe like 7.6. I was like, yes, when I kept seeing it as I'm like clicking through, like trying to find, is this the lowest, like, is this the lowest best net rating ever? So I don't know if this is like a sign that, you know, there's not, obviously there's not one dominant team last year, but maybe like a sign of like the at least perceived parity that Adam Silver would want. But I just thought that was really interesting because usually you have like your best teams are like the Warriors were like a plus 11 in the time of their like dynasty. Even the Thunder were a plus 10 at one point, which is pretty high. But usually you have a team that's like a plus 9 or a plus 8 here or there. But plus 7.5 is the lowest that you will find.
Yeah, we should have brought that up
one team
earlier, because when we were thinking about the Suns' dominance in the regular season, I was so focused on the gap between the first seed and the second seed.
Yeah,
because that was historical at that time. Didn't even care about the net rating. Wasn't even paying attention to that.
Stat number 4, effective field goal percentage. It's probably easy to guess the bottom of the league. We just talked about the worst teams. Pistons are the worst. The Thunder, second. Magic, third. All those teams stink. It's easy to pick those teams out. But can you guess the 4th worst team in effective field goal percentage?
4th worst? Was it Memphis?
It was not Memphis. It's the 48-win Toronto Raptors, who were 51% effective field goal percentage. Now, if you cover the Raptors or are a Raptors fan, maybe you know this, but as someone who covers mostly Western Conference teams, I thought, wow, I didn't remember that. So this team, obviously a great defensive team, but if they can just improve their shooting, like, wow, like things could get better for the Raptors pretty quickly.
Where was Memphis? Was I way off?
No, they're like 22nd, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were pretty bad. Not as bad as the Raptors, though. Stat number 5, points per possession for a pick and roll ball handler. So I found the top 5, actually all pretty interesting. So the qualifiers I put out there, they had to play at least 50 games, and they had to at least have a 30% pick and roll frequency, which if we're talking about like the highest level pick and roll frequency, it's like 50% for like a Luka Doncic or a Chris Paul. So these guys are definitely a rung below there, but maybe guys, I was kind of looking to see if we could find some guys that were maybe ready to take on a bigger role. Number one, or should we start with number one or number five, Al? Which one do you want?
Number five, build up, build up.
Number five, Tyrese Maxey at a 1.02, which I think is quite interesting for a Sixers team that starting to build some momentum in the media with the offseason moves that they made. They're all getting together in Charleston to hang out for training camp. It's going to be great. And Tyrese Maxey could be one of the big difference makers for the Sixers. And he was already really good in the pick and roll last year. And usually that just improves as players get older.
And Windhorse, I'll just bring it up. Yeah. Windhorse on the Hoop Collective today said that the Sixers refused to give up Maxey in the Lowry trade talks 2 years ago. Like that was the big hang up. Man, how much that would have changed the perception of that trade. Because they end up getting Precious Achiuwa, who you know ended up having a good season. But if they had landed Tyrese Maxey in that trade, how we think about him now.
Holy smokes. Number four, DeMar DeRozan, 1.03 for the Chicago Bulls. Had a great season last year, even good as a pick-and-roll ball handler. Number three, Donovan Mitchell, 1.03 as well. It's on the trading block, a guy that we know well, but operated, you know, very efficiently in the pick-and-roll last year. Number two, these next two are quite interesting. Anthony Simons is number two at 1.04. He's a guy that will be taking on a bigger role next to Dame next year, and they're going to need him to. And he operated very well in the pick and roll, and he's gonna need to play that well again next season. Let's see what that looks like. And then number one, he's been in the news.
Yeah, I know who it is. I know who it is.
You do? Who is it?
It's Jalen Brunson, isn't it?
It's Jalen Brunson, 1.06 for the New York Knicks. So the Knicks could possibly have two of the best pick and roll ball handlers in the NBA last year on their team here in a matter of weeks.
You're talking about Evan Fournier?
Evan Fournier. No, I just found that very interesting, that particular group, really minus DeMar DeRozan, but like Jalen Brunson, Anthony Simons, Tyrese Maxey are all guys that you think like, okay, they're ready to take another step in their career and help out these teams that they're, you know, Jalen Brunson joining the Knicks, Tyrese Maxey trying to help a title contender, Anthony Simons trying to help the Blazers get back into the playoffs, and the efficiency that they operate in the pick and roll would it bodes well for all of those players. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, Simons in particular, because I think there were some people who were kind of shocked by the cost of his contract when it first came out. And I think it's because a lot of people just think of him as a shooter. Like everyone agrees that he's a shooter, he's a high volume 3-point shooter, he's great. But like you said, like there was so much more he was doing last year that was going under the radar because the Trailblazers weren't really trying to win, because Dame was injured. But he showed so much more in his offensive game. And so I'm fascinated to see how he fits with Dame in this upcoming season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's primed to take another leap. All right. We will be right back after this break. Adam Mares is going to join us to talk about the Denver Nuggets.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts,
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started. With us today, we have Adam Mares. He's the host of the DNVR Nuggets podcast and Locked On Nuggets. Adam, what's up, man?
What's up, fellas? Happy Friday.
Thanks for being here, man. I wanted to bring you on because I feel like NBA podcasts have talked about the same teams over and over again. Like, we're just recycling the same stuff for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And I was like, no one's talking about the Nuggets. This is a good team. This is a, one of the contenders out there. So let's start with the big picture. The first move of the Denver Nuggets offseason was Tim Connelly leaving from Minnesota. Connelly was a well-respected executive, and the move caused a lot of Nuggets fans to start worrying about the future. Now that we're toward the end of the summer and the Nuggets fans have seen what Calvin Booth has done in his first offseason, how are Nuggets fans feeling?
It's kind of funny because so much of judging the offseason, it's like judging the draft. You do it draft night. How did they do? Like, I don't know. We haven't seen it. Nothing's changed from before the draft. So it's a little bit of that. I mean, I will say one of the big things about Calvin Booth, when he was named and he did his introductory press conference, it was, we feel like we know what this team needs. They need unsexy moves. Defense brought in so we can go to some defensive lineups. If you look at Kentavious Caldwell-Pope replacing Will Barton, absolutely a defensive upgrade and a guy that I think offensively didn't cost you a whole lot. Bruce Brown, absolutely a defensive player that I think could be part of a closing lineup for them and bolsters their defense. Christian Brown in the draft is a defensive player that they believe can play real minutes this year, you know, off of the bench, maybe 10, 15 minutes a night by midway through the season. All defensive players. So I think that he had a vision and he set out to accomplish that vision. Whether or not it works or not, well, to be determined.
You mentioned Bruce Brown, and he was kind of Denver's top free agent signing. And a lot of the interest around him is how versatile he is. He played a variety of roles with the Nets these past couple seasons. How do you envision Denver using Bruce Brown next to Jokic?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Bruce Brown is a unique player, and obviously Jokic is a unique player, and they're unique in ways that in theory fit well together. Bruce Brown's a really good screen and roll guy. Jokic is a good ball handler and pick and roll for a center, really for anybody, but from the center position. So you imagine some inverted pick and rolls between those two guys where guards are guarding the screener and bigs are guarding the ball handler in a way that works really well to both of their skill sets. Bruce Brown's also a great cutter. He just has a sense for the timing and angles of cuts. Jokic loves that. He seems to be an unselfish player. He's not a guy that's going to be eating up crazy possessions. So I think he's going to fit in really well. The question is, how much does he actually play with Jokic? Because right now the starting five is penciled in. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Michael Porter, that's your 2-3. Is Bruce Brown, are they going to stagger and have him out on the court a lot? Are you even going to go to closing lineups that feature Bruce Brown there over a player like Michael Porter or maybe Aaron Gordon? If you just need more defense on the perimeter, I think there's a good chance that he's going to be part of their best lineups, even though he might be part of their less sexy lineups. I think that's going to be one of the uncomfortable things the Nuggets are going to have to discover throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, you mentioned him being in a final five. Like, if you had Jamal Murray, KCP, Bruce Brown, Aaron Gordon, and Jokic, like, that seems like a totally different look from what we've seen in the past couple seasons from the Nuggets.
Well, so the thing that's interesting about the Nuggets, and we have to go back to the bubble and in the year that preceded it, the regular season, their identity was solid. It was at the end of the games, everybody clear out. Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic are going to play a two-man game that just works. They can run pick and roll with those two, spread pick and roll with those two guys 30 times in a row, get a different look at it every single time. And they're just, the chemistry between them is so great. So Michael Porter represents a phenomenal floor spacer, but is that as important as having another elite defender out on the court? That's going to be the question that they have. And to me, you look at the playoffs, you've got to have, you can't have any marks. You don't want a team that's looking around and saying, okay, we're just going to get that guy on an island. We're going to put him in this action, get him here, and then we're going to exploit that. That's how you win in the playoffs. The Nuggets, KCP, Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, none of those guys are marks. Jamal Murray, to me, is not a mark. You know, is he a great defender? No, but if you're going to spend your time just trying to isolate him, okay, Denver's going to outscore you at that. Jokic, obviously, is Jokic. He has his limitations, but I think same thing. The offense is going to outweigh that so long as you have defenders around. So he's the one that, to me, you look at Bruce Brown closing there, gives him that ability to say there's no marks on the court. So you're probably just going to have to play your regular offense versus our regular offense. And we trust that Murray and Jokic are going to be better than your end of game offensive lineup.
So the Nuggets had two first round picks in the 2022 draft. They took Christian Brown out of Kansas and Peyton Watson from UCLA. They also picked up Ismail Kamagate in the second round. What are some of the early impressions of their draft picks?
Well, so what's funny here is you look at it, Calvin Booth clearly saying we need to get defense. You get Christian Brown, who's a guy that throughout summer league was getting rebounds, block shots, steals, just deflections. I think he's a low ceiling guy, but a pretty high floor player. He was a champion in Kansas. He played all 40 minutes of the national title game, you know, guarding the other team's best players and having a real impact there. He's a guy that I think the team hopes can come in this year and be part of their playoff rotation, albeit on a low minute role, but a guy that's a low mistake. You don't really need to feed him. He's going to do it. Just, he's going to fit in around the edges. He'll make enough of his shots. He'll get enough rebounds to kind of justify being out there. But that at 6'7" is a really good perimeter contain defender. So he's a guy that they look at defense right away. Summer league, he didn't shoot the ball well, but I thought he guarded extremely well. He had a game against his former teammate at Kansas, Achai Agbaji, and I think he had 4 points against him. You know, he completely shut him down. So I think he's a guy that looks like a low ceiling, ready to go guy. Peyton Watson's an interesting one. He averaged 3 points per game at UCLA, the lowest of any player that played college basketball to be taken in the first round, which is not a badge of honor, I suppose. But he's represents, I think, the long term. How do you find a guy 6'8", 7'1" wingspan that's an elite defender? How do you find those guys? Because when they hit, every team wants them. They end up getting paid a ton of money, and there's like four of them in the league. He represents a guy that has a small chance of turning into that, a high chance of not turning into anything. But I think Calvin Booth says to win, we need to have one or two of those guys on the roster, and we just have to buy lottery tickets to that every year. So that's what he represents. Didn't see a lot out of from him in summer league that makes me think that's on the horizon. He's more of a 2-year project kind of guy. And then Ismail Kamagate was maybe the most impressive of all of Denver's rookies, taken in the second round, 6'11", NBA body, hustles, does a lot of things really, really well. Kind of reminds you of a Clint Capella type. But unfortunately, Denver drafted him. They traded a pick to get him. He's going to be a stash. He's going back to Paris. So he looks to me like a guy that's going to be very intriguing next year. But unfortunately, that's a next year proposition.
So we've already started to get some over-unders coming out for next season. And one of the sports books that released their over-unders this week had Denver's over-under at 49.5 wins. Now, if the listeners don't know, Denver has played at well above a 50-win pace for three of the last 4 years. Outside of injuries, what is the scenario where this Nuggets team wins less than 50 games? Like, do you have any real concerns other than injuries?
If you told me full health, I think it's absurd. They would win 55 games if they're fully healthy, maybe more than that. I mean, they won 49, I think, last year, you know, with I don't think people can name the starting lineup that they put out there last year. They just would be shocked to see it, and they won 49. So to me, you add Jamal Murray back and you add Michael Porter. If those guys were healthy all year, 55, 56, 57, which would be a franchise record, it is within striking distance. That number to me represents Vegas's disbelief that the Nuggets are going to be healthy. And I think rightfully so. We haven't really seen updates on Michael Porter. I don't know if he's playing 5-on-5 basketball yet. I don't know by all accounts, he should be ready for the regular season, but we just don't know. No, the team has not come out and said he's on track for this or he looks good doing this. There's no video of him working out. Jamal Murray got his first 5-on-5 action at the Nuggets facility 3 or 4 weeks ago for the first time. So is he going to be ready? Is he going to play? I don't know. And is he going to make it through 82 games? So to me, that number, Denver is the hardest team to bet on this year, because that number is really how many games are these guys going to play? Who knows that? I don't think they know that.
Yeah. One of the under the radar storylines with the Nuggets is how they continue to be the epicenter of the ongoing battle between cable companies and regional sports networks. Could you explain to our listeners who aren't aware of it what it's like being a Nuggets fan living in Denver, trying to follow the Nuggets at a time where they have their greatest player in franchise history?
Well, not to mention, they're also the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup this year, literally won the cup and had the greatest regular season they've had in their franchise history. And they also were not on local television, which is just absurd. So this is a thing that the situation here is one that I think deserves more mention, just from smarter people than I, quite frankly, in the business world, because Altitude, which is the broadcast partner for the Denver Nuggets owned by the Kroenkes, they are a one-off. They only cover the local teams. They're not part of, you know, Fox Sports or NBC or whatever. They're a one-off. And as a result, they are vulnerable to these large cable conglomerates like Comcast saying, hey, we don't need you like you need us, so we're going to jack up the price on you because you have no recourse other than to black out, you know, not be part of Comcast. And that's what's happening in Denver for 3 years, by the way. I think that this same thing is coming to all of the larger ones. You're seeing the smaller one-offs be the ones that are preyed on first. But I think it's a story that, look, people get their cable, they get their entertainment from different packages now, and the old model isn't there. And it sucks because, to your point, two-time MVP, both of those seasons were not broadcast to a majority of Denver cable customers. The Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup. They also had a defensive player of the year in Cale Makar, not on television this year. So we're missing a golden year of Denver sports is happening right now, and people aren't able to watch it. And I think it's going to be a story that's going to hit other markets. It's already hitting places like Dallas and New York. It's going to be a bigger story, I think, over the next two, three, four seasons. And the NBA, in my opinion, needs to figure out a new distribution model.
Yeah. I mean, the scariest part of that is you mentioned this has been going on 3 years. Like, the fact that they haven't been able to come to agreement over 3 years is just terrifying, because it's like, why would you think there's going to be an end in sight at this point?
There's not. Adam, that's the truth. There's not going to be.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Adam, thank you so much for answering our questions. It is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly trivia show where Andrew goes head-to-head with a beat writer. This week, his opponent is Adam Morris, host of the DNVR podcast and Locked On Nuggets. Adam, how this works, I've come up with 8 questions related to the Nuggets. Some are easy, some are hard. You're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. You look like you're already sweating. If you get it right, you'll get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1. And we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So I just need a number between 1 and 8. Very easy to start off with, just a number between 1 and 8.
I'll go with John Elway, number 7.
Number 7. Aaron Gordon has participated in the dunk contest 3 times, coming up just short in all 3 contests. Gordon may be unlucky, but he does have some competition for unluckiest dunk contest participant ever. This Hall of Famer and NBA champ participated in the dunk contest 5 times during the 1980s without ever bringing home the trophy. Who is he?
Oh, man. A champion? 5 times in the 80s, huh?
Hall of Famer and NBA champion times during the 80s. Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, my word.
This is so tough. Champion... The phrasing of this is such a technicality. Was he a champion in the 80s, or you're not telling me that?
I can't okay. say. Right. It might have been in a later decade, perhaps.
Man, I don't know. I don't know who it is. I don't know if I have a good answer.
It's okay. This is one of the toughest ones, I will tell you.
I don't even think I have a great answer for you. A loser, a multi-time loser who is also a champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to be a dunker, like, a Hall of Famer, and a champion.
It's because you'd think like Neek, but I don't have an answer. I don't have one.
All right, Andrew, you have a chance to steal. Can you think of any names?
Yeah, before you said champion, like Dominique, but I don't know if he won or not.
He actually did. I think he lost 3, but he did get some wins.
Okay. Oh, shoot. I mean, I was born in 86, so it's hard for me to remember watching.
Oh, that contest. Sounds like an excuse, yeah. Andrew.
I don't know. James Worthy. I have no idea.
Adam, you want to throw a guess out? Did you have a name come to you?
No. I was thinking like maybe Clyde, but no, I don't have one.
So it was Clyde Drexler.
Was it Clyde?
It was. Which the NBA champ thing kind of throws you off because obviously it didn't happen while in Portland. Yeah. Okay. Well, that was an exciting one, even though nobody got it.
I kind of hedged.
If you guys tie, I will give you a half point for that.
Yes.
Okay, Andrew, it is your board. Where would you like to go next?
Number one.
Question number one. Nikola Jokic was selected to his 4th career All-NBA team this season. Including this upcoming season's roster, how many teammates has Jokic played with who were also selected to an All-NBA team at some point during their NBA career? You don't have to tell me their names. You just have to give me a number.
Oh, so
These are players that Jokic has played with who were selected to an All-NBA team at some point during their NBA careers. Not necessarily with the Nuggets.
Okay.
And we're including this season's roster.
Two.
That is incorrect. Adam, you have a chance to steal.
The only one I can think of is DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know who else there would be, and I don't remember if DeMarcus Cousins made like a one of the teams. I'm going to go 0.
Would you believe it is 3?
3.
DeMarcus Cousins, who made 2 second team All-NBAs, which I forgot. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Thomas, who played 12
right.
games
that's
with
right.
the Nuggets.
That's right. IT'd 9 games he played. Dang it.
And then one of the free agents we didn't discuss, DeAndre Jordan, coming into the Nuggets.
Oh.
So that's where we get our 3.
Man, a murderer's row right there. Yeah. All the greats.
All right, nice. Adam. The score is tied. Let's control the board.
Let's go number 4.
Question number 4. A well-publicized part of Jamal Murray's story is the intense workouts he did growing up, led by his father. Which of the following was not one of the training workouts that Jamal did growing up? So I'm going to name 5 types of workouts. One of them is false. So we have push-ups in the snow, squats with a cup of tea balanced on his thigh, piggyback sprints with his younger brother, dribbling a basketball on ice, or running uphill backwards.
Whose is this? This is me?
Yes, yes, yes.
Running uphill backwards sounds like something everybody does, but I don't remember it ever being discussed, running uphill backwards. What was the third one?
Piggyback sprints with his younger brother.
That sounds like a thing everybody does as well. So I don't know. Like I think I did both of those things. I'm pretty sure 1, 2, and 4. Yes, 1 and 2 for sure. 4, I'm pretty sure. I'm going to say, is it flat in Kitchener? I'll say 5, running up a hill backwards.
Adam, that is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
I kind of thought maybe piggyback sprints. I'll go piggyback sprints.
That is correct.
Yes.
I'll bet he did that at some point.
Perhaps he did, but it was not in the article. Okay, Andrew, you're now on the board with a single point, and you have control of the board.
Number two.
Question number two. Which two players on the current Nuggets roster played together in college?
Hmm.
Yeah, this is one I have a feeling Adam here. Knows. And I have a feeling Andrew does not.
This is not connecting with me right now.
You're just going to have to name two Nuggets.
Yeah.
Roughly the same age, I guess.
I know. That's the tough part. Gosh.
Well, you know, Jokic didn't play Division I ball, so that narrows it down by one.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, Bones didn't. I don't think they don't have a VCU guy. Do they have another Zeke? Did anybody? I don't know that they have a guy Zeke's age that played Arizona.
Any guesses, Andrew? Want to just throw out some names?
Gosh, I really just don't know. I just really don't know. Like, I'm thinking like KCP's Georgia, no one else. Jamal Murray, Kentucky. Like,
all right. Well, that's the end of your turn, Andrew. Adam.
Yeah, Davon Reed and Bruce Brown.
That is correct.
Damn, I was going to say, if you got that one, it would have been insane, I think.
Yeah. I played for Miami.
Yeah, for Miami. Yes. Oh, look at this.
So that ties us up. 1-1. And Adam, you now have control of the board. You can move ahead here.
Let's go with number three.
Okay, there are 9 players in Denver Nuggets history to score at least 50 points in a single game, and we're going to try to name them all. So how this works, you're going to give me a name, then Andrew will give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles. So you just have to give me any Denver Nugget who scored 50 points in a game.
Jamal Murray.
That is correct. Andrew.
Melo.
That is correct. Back to Adam.
Andre Miller. Was this like for Denver, you're saying? Or is...
Yeah, for Denver.
I'll go to Corey Brewer then.
Brewer did not score 50 points for Denver. Did he?
For Minnesota.
Yeah, he did that for Minnesota.
Did he do it in Minnesota? And I just forgot that.
Andrew, you have to give me one more name if you want your 1 point.
I was trying to save some big ones for later.
Alex English?
Alex English was, yes. We also had
David Thompson, Nikola Jokic.
We had Kiki Vandeweghe, Allen Iverson, Michael Adams, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. David Thompson, he's the most interesting one because I feel like I haven't done the research, but it must be the biggest gap between like career high and second career high because he scored 73 points in that final game when he was in the scoring contest. But then his second career high was 44 points. So he had never scored a 50-point game before scoring 73. Okay, Andrew, you got a single point for that. It is now 2-1. You have control of the board. Only 3 questions left.
Number five.
Jeff Green has been to the playoffs with 8 different NBA franchises.
Oh, wow.
With which NBA franchise did he play the most playoff games?
Oh, that is really interesting. Is it the Rockets?
That is incorrect. Dang Adam, you have a chance to steal for 1 point.
The most playoff games? Oklahoma City.
That is also incorrect.
Is it the Nets?
That is also incorrect. Any more guesses?
Oh, no, I'm done.
It was the 2017-18 Cleveland Cavaliers. 24 games.
Dang it.
In a single postseason. I thought you might go Boston there because he played like 15, I think, with Boston. Okay, so this is still wide open. Adam, you're only down 1, but you have control.
Really
of the board.
Bad.
There's 2
really bad
questions
battle.
Left.
Is this me? Oh, sorry.
Yes, 8. This is Red. Question number 8. When his career is over, Nikola Jokic will likely have the highest career earnings of any second round pick in NBA history. Through last season, however, and not taking into account any future guaranteed money, which second-round pick has made the most amount of money in their NBA career?
I mean, I would guess. I'll go Manu?
Manu Ginobili. That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal. Second-round pick through last season, not taking into account any future guaranteed money.
Chris Middleton?
That would be the answer for next year. But as of right now, It is former Denver Nugget Paul Millsap.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
that's, yeah. $192 million. Okay, now, Andrew, this Denver last question, you got to get it right, or Adam's going to have a chance to tie you up. And as we remember,
and
I promised Adam a half point.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So you got to get this right, Andrew, if you want to win.
Okay.
Last season, much was made of Nikola Jokic's dominance in various advanced stats. One of those was 538's Raptor War metric, where the gap between Jokic and the second-ranked player was as large as the gap between second and 26.
Hmm.
Who was ranked second in Raptor War last season behind Nikola Jokic?
Oh, no. Adam knows this.
Oh, no, Andrew.
I don't think I know this.
Who was it?
Giannis? I don't know.
That is incorrect, Andrew.
Oh, it felt wrong.
Man, and this is...
Now, Andrew, you were probably thinking of Raptor, where Giannis was second. I, of course, was referring to Raptor War.
Wait, what?
Raptor War, which, if you remember on 538, you have the different columns. The final column is Raptor War, which is Raptor wins above replacement.
And it's like a cumulative, Giannis. Right? It's factoring in how many games you played as well. Man, who played all the games?
Now, Adam, this is for the win.
I know
you get
it is.
That half
the pressure
point, you
here
win
is
it
just...
all right here.
Well, man, is it Joel Embiid?
Was Joel Embiid ranked second in Raptor War last season? He was not.
Oh!
It was Jason Tatum.
Jason Tatum.
Oh man, Adam, thanks so much for coming on the show. We
2-1.
Oh, 2-1. That's a bad one. Go follow Adam on Twitter at Adam_Mares. Go listen to the DNVR Nuggets podcast and also to Locked On Nuggets. Adam, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks so much to Adam Mares for joining the show. If you go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review, we will read it on the podcast, just like user Kelly2025, who writes, "Worth it for the Saturday Slam and Jam, 5 stars. I'm giving this 5 stars just out of respect for Schlecht and Spears on the Saturday Slam and Jam, starting my Saturday with 2 trivia bros, just puts a smile on my face every time. No idea what they look like, but they sound hot."
Ooh.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening and for subscribing to The Athletic NBA Show. Go to theathletic.com/NBA Show and get The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. There's still great content being put out there every single day on The Athletic, so be sure to stay locked in. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So we will go on an every other week format until the season starts again. So we will talk to you guys again in 2 weeks.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.